And we're back. You're listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9. I'm your host, Patty Walden. I think we have a question. I want to go ahead and jump in and take the question from Chanel in Atlanta. Chanel, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hi. I was diagnosed with uterine cancer in 2014 and received a full hysterectomy. And just recently, this past December, I had a full PET scan, and it showed that I'm perfectly fine, no signs of cancer or what have you. But just a few weeks ago, I've just had all of a sudden sense of bloating, strong sense of bloating, and hasn't gone down, hasn't gone anywhere. And I went to the doctor, and she just, did her normal test and felt around my belly and then said she's going to schedule a CAT scan for the 14th of February. But I'm just so concerned, and I'm also concerned that she's not that concerned about this bloating, and I just wanted to know if bloating was one of the signs or symptoms of a pancreatic cancer or a gas, intestinal cancer or anything, because I know from the previous diagnosis with the uterine cancer, there was a rapid growth or mass within my uterus that plugged them to go ahead and do the biopsy to then find the diagnosis. But I feel like there's no sense of urgency, but I'm not comfortable right now.
Dr. Kobe, you want to take that?
Yeah. Well, congratulations first on beating uterine cancer. And I'm glad you're able to call in today and ask these questions. You know, one of the limitations of or one of the problems with many types of cancers is the symptoms can be quite nonspecific. And so matching up when you have a symptom, whether there is a tumor or a cancer diagnosis versus it being something else, can be challenging and tricky. And sometimes it does take a few office visits before a problem is clearly identified. I think in your case, if you have tremendous anxiety, I think you need to contact your physician again and let them know. Another option is to also seek some consultation with a gastroenterologist, a specific type of internal medicine doctor who can evaluate you more specifically for bloating. Sometimes they'll incorporate an endoscopy, which is taking a lighted telescope and either looking through the mouth or through the bottom to see if there's some cause of bloating, such as an ulcer or gastritis, which is inflammation of the stomach, which may be unrelated to tumors or cancers. But I know since you're a cancer survivor, I'm sure the anxiety level is quite high.
Yes, and I know the power of the mind and how you have to be very cautious of your thoughts during this time. So it's kind of hard.
Well, we wish you the best for sure.
Thank you so
much. Good luck
to
you, Chanel. Thank you so much for calling in. So, Dr. Kobe, I know Chanel mentioned how the mind can play tricks on you and with you. And again, we talk about the fear of just wanting to know or not wanting to know. How common is that in folks that you see or talk to? Or Sheila, you might have run into people who say, you know what, I don't want to do this. You first, Dr. Kobe.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. As a surgeon, a lot of times there'll be a first line of defense for patients come and see me. It's either going to be a gastroenterologist or an internist or somebody else who may have identified this problem in the patient. Usually when they come to me, they'll already have a diagnosis, not necessarily of a cancer, but of a mass or a lump or a bump in the pancreas or something of that nature. So when they get to me, then the discussion is, all right, what is the proper workup to determine, number one, what is this? What is it done? Number two, and then three, how do we treat it? So there's a stepwise process here. And I think the first thing is sitting down and getting information.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I mentioned, access to care, we've talked about that a little bit, is there's also superstition and anxiety about a diagnosis that might prevent somebody from seeking help.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, more information usually makes us smarter and more comfortable to be able to face challenges and start to tackle them.
Excellent. Great. Sheila, have you experienced that where you've had to kind of really grab the person and say, hey, it's going to be okay. Don't allow this to play tricks on you, your mind.
Absolutely. I don't have any data necessarily to support this, but through my personal experience, I think it's also generational in nature. I think my dad was a greatest generation, and they learned to be really tough and not really make a big fuss of things or bring a lot of attention to themselves. So I think sometimes people who are of that mindset also have won't necessarily seek treatment. Again, no data, just my personal observations. But I think it's, I do have some people in my lives who are very reluctant to seek medical attention when they have an issue, or even if it's nonspecific. So I'm a better safe than sorry type person myself, and certainly not an alarmist in any way, but I have had some experiences where I've had to kind of support someone through seeing their doctor a little more quickly than perhaps they might have done in the beginning.
Sure.
For sure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kuby, let's talk about testing. What is the specific test? Is there a specific testing that will only diagnose that pancreatic cancer?
Yeah, it's a tough one. The gland itself, the organ of interest, sits in the back of the belly, and it sits amongst a lot of major big blood vessels, making it a tough area to biopsy. It's also kind of organ that if you poke at it, it's like poking a skunk, because pancreatic enzymes, which this gland makes, can leak and cause real havoc. And even for just the biopsy or for surgery, it's stuff we struggle with as surgeons, but obviously our patients struggle with. So challenging area to get to. There are some blood tests, there are some imaging studies, and we talked about some of the symptoms. The truth is there's no great screening test. An ideal screening test would be that you could go into your doctor and get a mammogram for breast cancer, or a colonoscopy for colon cancer, or this blood test called a PSA for prostate cancer. We just don't have that. We have a blood test called a CA19-9. It's a protein that will circulate in the blood in some patients with pancreatic cancer, but it's not specific. So it's not a reliable screening test. We won't just check everybody for it. If there's a concern of a pancreatic cancer, we'll check that test because it can be useful to chart the course of disease in that situation. So if somebody has a concern because of family history and maybe some weight loss or abdominal pain, which are additional symptoms that might affect pancreatic cancer patients, we might start with the blood test and maybe imaging, which would be a CT scan or an MRI scan. These give us pretty good pictures into the belly and help us to see if there's a mass there. There are additional procedures, something called an endoscopic ultrasound, that once a mass is found, can be used to safely biopsy these tumors and help give the tumor a name so that we can start to treat it.
Excellent. Thank you. Tiana, what's been your biggest challenge throughout this journey so far? Because it is a continuum, right?
I think that the cancer in and of itself is actually not the biggest challenge. Again, I had wonderful people around me. I had a phenomenal medical staff at Winship Cancer Center that included Dr. Kuby, Dr. Josh Weiner, Dr. Clafter is my oncologist, and these people came together and they had excellent knowledge and wisdom about what should come next, and they did a great job of keeping me at ease about what I was going to be doing over the next 6, 7, 8 months. The challenges were really around things like dealing with insurance and having a flood of bills come through that read like, you owe us $84,000 for, whatever the treatment is that you had. Those are huge challenges, not being able to work full time and not getting paid. Those are the types of things that impact day-to-day life and really make it, on top of the physical challenges that there are, make it almost impossible to even deal with the diagnosis and deal with the fact that a person is sick with, potentially a terminal life-threatening illness, because life still goes on even in the midst of having this horrific diagnosis. Bills still need to be paid. Children still need to have things for school and get to places. Work still needs to be done. So those type of daily challenges are things that people don't often talk about a lot, because they're more concerned with the diagnosis and maybe the physical aspect of it. Am I going to live or am I going to die? In between that time, people are still dealing with the very everyday and real realities of what it takes just to get up in the morning and survive your normal life outside of having a diagnosis of something that, you know, could potentially take your life.
That's interesting. You know, I haven't heard that. That's an interesting take, that it's actually beyond the illness and there's more to it. You know, we don't really hear people talking about that, but it's innate. You think about it, you know, the survivability, who's going to take care of my kids when I'm gone, if I'm gone, if I go. So I appreciate that perspective. Sheila, is there a particular challenge that you had with dealing with your dad and serving as a co-support? I know there were other family members around, but was there a specific challenge that you all faced?
You're right. I was very lucky in that we have a large family. We were able to take care of my dad. But I think his independence was probably, while it's a very good thing,
yes,
was also one of the most difficult things to deal with him, because he was very much, excuse me, I need to take care of myself. I don't want to let my family down.
Yeah.
And even to the days when he unfortunately went into hospice, he said, I need to hang on for you guys. I need to stay here for you. But he didn't want to give up his car keys, and he didn't want to give up all the things that he loved to do. And it was unfortunate. And after a while, we did have to do that. But I think with us, it was more about making sure that he was well enough, giving him that time or giving him that independence, but at the same time making sure that he was taking care of himself in the right way and not doing things that were a danger to him or a danger to others, like driving when he was really, really sick,
right,
or really having effects from his treatments. So that was the biggest challenge with my dad. He was a very strong-willed gentleman. So, but we loved him for that, for sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a mom who's very, very stubborn, but I think that helps her to survive. You know, it gives her internal strength. Dr. Kubi, are there any additional tips that you can give someone out there, again, just to help with coping with just getting there, getting to the point of getting tested and or having, after having been tested and diagnosed, just next steps and good tips on survivability?
Well, I think the first message I'd like to give is one of hope. You know, this is a bad disease. There are many bad diseases out there, and there are other really bad cancers out there. But we do have some wonderful and outstanding stories, and I'm sitting next to one of them right now. And people can do well. And survivability is slowly but surely increasing. We do have more options than we had. So I think if people can put a little bit of hope into their minds when they get this news, after they've taken a deep breath and sort of come to grips that there's going to be a lifestyle change and some things coming down the road, that get some information. Find a place that does this well. And if you have a bad interaction with one provider, get information from another, because you need to be comfortable with the people who are treating you. There are no guarantees for any of us in life, so we all have to go one step at a time. And I think taking a little bit of time to bite off what life has put your way, and then get information, is really what you want to do while maintaining some degree of hope.
Sure. I do have a question. Let me that I forgot to ask. Do you see this disease more prevalent in women than men, or men than women?
The numbers are pretty equal, men and women. Absolutely. Perhaps we're seeing an increase. Well, we're seeing an increase overall now.
Okay.
It is a disease that is on the rise, but it's pretty equally spread between men and women.
Okay. Thank you, Sheila. What would be your message?
If I can add to that, actually, through the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, they do provide patient services. So there is a phone number that you can call where you can get someone who has resources for you, who can connect you with doctors in your area that specialize in pancreatic cancer, who can give you information on clinical trials, and also connect you to a network of other patients, survivors,
right,
and their caregivers. So that was instrumental in our experiences. That was one of the first phone calls that we made, just to get the information that we were looking for in order to really tackle what we wanted to tackle with this disease. So that would definitely be something that I would recommend to folks who are facing this, is to reach out and use those resources.
Excellent. And Tiana, your message.
I think my message is really just for anybody who is dealing with this disease or any other disease. Somebody told me along the way that you're a survivor at the very first, or from the beginning, you're a survivor. Every day that you get up and you beat this disease and you're alive, you're a survivor. You don't need to wait for your official paper that comes and says that you've won. And I think just carrying that message of hope that you can survive, and surrounding yourself with people who give you hope, surrounding yourself with a great medical staff and people who care about you and help you to have hope on the days that maybe you might not feel like you can do it. I think that's really what I want for people to know, is that it is possible and it can be done, and to believe that you're a survivor from the very beginning, and you will be.
Excellent. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderfully informative program to me, and I'm hopeful to all of the listeners out there. Appreciate your story, Tiana. Thank you so much, Dr. Kuby, for your insight and information. And Sheila Cosgrove, thank you so much for what you do with volunteerism. I'm your host, Patty Walden. You've been listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. We're so appreciative of the work that the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development does here at Clark Atlanta University. I want to say to you that health is wealth and knowledge is power. So be sure to make a conscious effort to make better eating choices, better living choices, better choices, better chances, better you. So breathe. Thanks for listening tonight.
Hello, I am Dr. Shafiq Khan, Director of the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. The Cancer Center is committed to reducing the burden of prostate cancer health disparities in the African American community through research, outreach, and education. On behalf of the Cancer Center, I would like to thank you for joining us today on Your Health Connection.
Your Health Connection is made possible by funding from the National Institutes of Health and the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. For more information, please call 404-880-6878 or go to ccrtd.cau.edu. If you would like to listen to this show on demand, just go to wclk.com and click on the Your Health Connection page. For Patty Walden and producers Dr. Kimberly Davis and Rob Maynard, this is Jamal Ahmed. Thanks for listening to Your Health Connection.